Wishes. This is the Priority Queue. This Priority Queue episode is an extract from show 121, Tweet My Meat, which was recorded at Network Field Day 4 in October in 2012. It's the section where the delegates discuss the Spirin Axon product and the use cases of where we'd actually use the product shortly after we received a presentation during Network Field Day. Spirin has asked us to publish this show as a single, sponsored, just to pick out those key facts and to share them with you once again. Before we dive into the show, I just want to point out that this was recorded using a field microphone. We couldn't find the best place to record, so we did the best we could. And there are almost 10 of the delegates in the room, so the discussion was interesting, and there's a lot going on, and a lot of detailed discussion about how you can bring the Spirin Axon into your network, but the audio isn't as good as what we would normally hope for. We are working on it, and we'll get better in the long run. Let me tell you a little bit about the Spirin Axon before we get into the recording. The average enterprise needs to do a considerable amount of verification to ensure applications and networks run properly. However, your typical IT operations team really doesn't have time to do complex testing setups and executions. It's hard to make testing routines, testing stratagems, create traffic ramps, and to have the tools that generate, and then to have a tool that receives the traffic, and then to have another tool that actually monitors it. It's actually very difficult to generate traffic and monitor the performance. What the Spirin Axon allows you to do is to get a testing rig set up before your network is finally deployed and handed over, and try and locate some of these unknowns and determine where the growing pain is going to be, like packet loss problems, non-optimal QoS. The Spirin Axon gives you a networking test tool that is able to perform the most complex tests, but at the same time can be configured to present test result in simple terms. The typical IT operations personnel doesn't need or want to know, in fact, the whole ins and outs of testing. They just want to be able to run a test repeatedly between, say, in the case of video conferencing, you might want to run it between all 20 branch offices. You don't really want to know how it's generated, you just want to run it. That just needs one person to set it up. So in this case, you might want to test HTTP over IPv4 or H323 sessions. And if it doesn't, you want to have some information to be able to measure the reaction there. So the Spirin Axon is perfect for these scenarios because it really does reduce complex testing tasks down to something that can be performed quickly and simply, but more important, repeatably. You can do exactly the same test over and over. And to be fair, that is the most important set. So the Spirin Axon has some really rapid answers to will it work. I'm going to throw you over to the session we recorded at Network Field Day about the Spirin Axon when the delegates came back to talk about what they'd heard. Thanks. In the last few weeks, Spirin has been talking to me about a product called Axon. In the past, Spirin has been making these bus-sized load generators, right? and they come with a price tag that's, you know, fairly generously sized, but they are a fully dedicated, all knobs, all singing, all dancing, high-kicking load generation devices, and they do an amazing set of stuff. But they've come out with an Axon, which is this new product, targeting at the enterprise. It'll be a while before it hits the mainstream. They've not quite yet released it, but they're able to brief us about it. I know you do a lot of work on them, John. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I've used their competitor. I've used Ixia in the past, and we kind of need to, I guess, twiddle all the knobs of OSPF and the protocol and the combination of sending traffic and, you know, injecting prefixes. I guess it was hard for me to see the value in the Axon because I guess it's not really targeted at the type of testing that I'm doing. It's kind of targeted at the enterprise. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, there's probably people in the room it's kind of more targeted at. I mean, it seemed very good because they've really taken the UI seriously. They've actually made a real effort into making the UI.
I love that playlist.
Yeah,
well, you actually take a playlist of traffic and then press play, and it actually runs a traffic.
Yeah, it looks like a Mac OS app. It's beautiful.
Well, at first it seemed a little bit a little childish at first, but it's like, no, it's actually very well structured. It's not cheesy. It makes sense. It's logical.
But it's childish for a reason because, I mean, think about the first time you opened Wireshark. It was like sensory overload. There were so many knobs and buttons and switches and bells and whistles, you didn't know what you wanted to do with the app. And this way, they hide all of that behind a layer of abstraction, and they say, guess what? You can do really awesome stuff by drag here, drop here, and click play. And then you can take the output of that device, feed it to whatever you want, and say, okay, this is what we got out of it.
Well, I think they're taking a very similar path to what a lot of the open source projects have been doing. And you look at tools like Load UI and whatnot, you know, frankly looks the same. And what they've been able to marry it to is this big complicated bus size gear, which can, you know, eat packets and crap frames, you know, and it's nice to put a human readable interface, human usable interface on the front of it.
But you do lose some of the complexity behind it as a result. So it's, I don't know if I call it dumbed down, but it is, you can only go a certain depth, I think, from what they're saying before. Well, if there isn't a button for it, tough. And the other compromises were made, like, you know, the level of resolution of time, because it's built to a price, right? So you're talking millisecond resolution, not nanosecond on the bus-sized products. Yeah. But for the market, I mean, I think it seems pretty well targeted.
But honestly, when I look at network ready for use testing in a data center, frankly, while I'll measure it to 10 millisecond slices, is, you know, really start characterizing thing in 100 millisecond slices and finding, you know, is it, you know, 250 milliseconds, 500 milliseconds, 750, you know, 1,000, really. In those ranges, I don't care about a millisecond. It's really not that important to, I think, the testing that most of us do.
Right. I've used the very expensive test center in an enterprise environment for validation of data center designs and validating reconvergence times and device capacity and things like that. And it was an expensive box that came with a guy. It was a big project. And, you know, there was nothing that we did that couldn't have been done with the white box hardware approach they're introducing now. And, you know, their stuff is fabulous. The resolution and the capacity and the precision that they offer and the full-size stuff is amazing. But, you know, most enterprises aren't test labs and really don't need all that.
Well, so they may not be buying... They're selling into markets, I think. This is aimed at markets that they're not selling into right now, you know. Like,
right.
Because, you know, enterprise folks don't need that sort of thing, and they don't know what to do with all the knobs, so they just don't end up buying it. Well,
but this is what we needed.
Yeah, you know, now it looks like a tape deck. We can stack on, you know, all kinds of different stuff and, you know, hit play, and, yeah, cool.
So
tape deck, what are those?
And it's about a sixth of the price.
Yeah, you know.
Well, plus licensing.
Yeah, you know,
we'll see where that goes when they announce that, right?
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing, because they offer either the hardware platform or the VM platform, and it's very interesting how they've re-architected the timing mechanism to support VM hardware, and from further digging from what we were finding today, it is any hypervisor. So that's always a bonus as well. So if you are, in my situation, I am in enterprise, there's a number of finger-pointing, like kids amongst third parties, your fault, my fault, whose fault is it? And normally you run Escapee or something really dirty to find where the packet, how to generate something, whereas this, being a relatively cheap price and the ongoing, is something I can instantly, quickly point a finger and say, no, it's not our problem, that you fix it, you two kids talk, because it's not us. And it's something that I've struggled with for a long time. So it's filling a niche, it's not filling a niche, it's probably filling a wide market. Yeah. And I think you'll find, once the first few get out there, you'll have a big uptake.
Well, I think the enterprise is where, like, network management and you know, these networking applications go to die, because how often does a typical enterprise buy something, it looks great on paper, and then it gets there and you never use it? So I think the simplicity of it's pretty cool. I still think getting this data and then doing something with it to be a little bit more proactive than reactive, which is where we've been forever with such a limited tool set that we have. But overall, I like the UI. So.
Yeah, in general, enterprises won't buy anything until they've been burned. I've been there. Until you've been hacked, until you've been whatever. Then you go buy an IDS IPS. You go buy, you know, a subscription
the horse
to the
is gone.
So yeah, you know. You know, so in this case, if some, you know, if there's a performance problem, you go look for a tool that can address it. And for enterprises, I mean, for those guys that don't, they don't understand all the knobs and dials. They're not, you know, the town in this room. Those guys don't get all that. They need... really, you know, hey, green or not so green, and if not so green, call vendor, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Cool. Anybody get a clear understanding of the appliance offering versus the VM offering? Is it pretty much the same deal? Or
The VM offerings, they're not able to give you the same sort of guarantees on the hardware because they understand what hardware is going in.
Sure.
So specifically in the motherboard, because of the Intels and the Intel chipsets that drive the network adapters, they actually know the latencies and all that type of stuff, so they can have much more fine-grained control.
I imagine they'll have a compatibility list. And
I think what they're waiting on is the network card implementation that they talked about toward the end of the presentation, where instead of having to ship you a box, they can ship you a plug-in module, and you know what? Doesn't matter what hardware you're running on at that point, because it's all one self-contained unit.
Server and go, you know.
Yeah.
This is the Spiron on NIC, the Sonic.
Right.
Sonic. With CPU and RAM on the card. I mean, great idea. You know, plug it in, go for it.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of ways they'll take it. It'll just depend on how the market and, you know, the take-up and so forth.
This is just to put in the market to get people talking about it while they figure out what's the next step.
Yes.
Well, I say the market between the hardware and the software, being the hardware, you can put a box in your backpack, run around as a VAR to a customer, and kill their network, do whatever you want to their network, test it to the buggery, and you've got what you need. Yeah. Whereas the VM would work in a situation where you're a permanent static place, and you can allow for that difference. And so, in fact, you can walk around with a portable traffic generator. It's not 11 RU, it's 2 RU, and it's a box, and you can.
It'll actually be 1 RU when it comes out. It's about the size of an old Netgear switch.
Yeah,
the old one.
There you are.
Six inches by 5 inches.
Well, one on the table was two or whatever it was.
Yeah,
but that looked
like that.
Yeah.
So the use case I had in mind is that most enterprises have a gigabit pipe to the internet, and what you want to do is run traffic through your firewall. Let's say you're running an ASA or a Juniper or something. You want to know it'll run at a gig. You don't really need to know it running at 2 or 5 or 10 because you've only got 1 gig to the internet. But what you're running through the firewall is X amount of email, X amount of IPsec, X amount of SSL, VPNs, X amount of, you know, web traffic coming from your proxy server. So you can just go in and build up a profile for that, put it on either side of your firewall and run it. And if it doesn't break, you can say, good, ready to go. That's all I want. You know, or, you know, the guy says, I want to test my email server to find out how much mail it can send. If your email server can get to 300 megabits per second of emails, that's good enough. You know, because that's a hell of a lot of email. You don't need to run gigabits per second.
I love the firewall aspect is great because if you look at the spec sheets on, you know, they're so inflated. IIS will do 100 gig in the lab with a particular MTU, and in reality it's 450 byte MTU times packet per second.
So an ASA firewall application inspection on HTTP enabled has a maximum performance of about 70 megabits per second when I last tested them about 3 years ago. I'm sure it's better today, but you know, you can only run HTTP inspection in a policy for a very small set of traffic. Before it blows up, and I've blown up a few ASA that way.
You mean you don't run your production firewalls with one UDP rule?
64 byte packets.
I had an ACE module set, the Cisco ACE, 16 gigabits per second, balls to the wall, turned on DNS inspection, maximum throughput's under 200 megabits per second. The DNS inspection rule turned on. Found out the hard way when we got to 200 megabits per second for a carrier. On the DNS with a load balance, we had to turn off inspection and that fixed it. And that this would have validated that. We would have found that. We would have seen the profiles go up. So the second thing that we looked at the Spirit, and it was a couple of things. What we're really doing is just picking out the key topics, is the iTest Lab. The key thing about testing, if you've ever done much testing, is automation. You've got to be able to do it again and again and again. And then you've got to be able to compare what you did, and after you made a change, and then after you made another change, and then the vendor says, oh, yeah, we know that the DNS doesn't work, so we'll send you some new special code that's supposed to solve it, and then it doesn't. That's never happened, has it?
No.
And then you get another version of code that's almost working until it blows up when you run the test. So you have to keep running the test over and over. So lab automation is actually quite important. And they showed us, it was iTest Lab, is that, did I get that right?
iTest, yeah.
Just sort of iTest.
Well, that was an
iTest Lab Optimizer.
Yeah. And what I thought was cool about that was it was like looking at GNS3. But it was the back end of it was your real hardware. So I mean, you sort of draw out your network or the pieces of the puzzle, and you connect them together, and it looks like GNS3. So you know, people understand that, but it's actually running the real hardware on the back end.
Right, and it was going beyond as well, just being able to repeat one specific topology. It was into the whole: how do you schedule lab time? You reserve the lab, you book it, and by the way, I need a different physical topology for this. Okay, well, I'll talk to a layer one switch and I'll reroute your connections between the devices, and so long as it's available, click go and it'll build it for you.
Yeah, you didn't need to book the lab, you just need to book the interfaces you need or the devices you need.
Well, I think one thing that's, you know, a lot of times when you have to fund labs in the business is that you actually have to show the business impact of it, track what users have used it, and ideally figure out what business it drove, right? Whether it's a change control or selling something for those that sell stuff to people. And that the notion of having basically a service catalog for your lab infrastructure to be able to document, like, hey, we've invested in all these tools for our company, and look, people are actually using it.
Yeah.
It's not just sitting here in this dusty cold room.
And it'd be pretty cool to have a vendor come in. So if you're a reseller and you've got a lab in the back, and the vendor comes in and says, you can actually print out a thing and say, well, X number of people were using this in our lab, we want to keep it. Here's the use chart.
Well, I mean, I just did that a month ago, so I had to buy a new physical layer switch.
And what I did is I use a competitive product. So there's a couple of other competitors in the market. There's Quali Systems, and then there's like Gale Force Lab Manager, which has basically been around for the longest time. But basically, you go through that, the equivalent tool, yeah. and you run your report, and you say, these 10 internal teams are using this. Here's a snapshot from today, and it was something like 20 different people had topologies running at any one time, and that's a business case. We're running out of capacity. We need more of the physical air switch. But the argument carries equally to devices under test.
Mm-hmm.
Once you solve the problem of making your lab devices readily available to your lab users without the barrier of patching, repatching, and you can do it dynamically, I mean, the efficiency argument, it's real. It's not just marketing. It works. You know, you get the use out of it.
And you save money because, you know, if you set up a bigger physical lab, you end up having to have a lab operations team to maintain it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, like we said when we talked earlier, you know, you tend to have the lab manager who's the one who holds the keys and doesn't let you in, because their job is to do the repatching and to...
To stop engineers from stealing the equipment and taking it out to the customer.
Spares pool.
That would never happen.
Well, if you don't have to pay for a team, you can actually buy more equipment. What the heck? Yeah,
absolutely. Mm.
Well, thanks for listening to the show, sponsored by Spirent. We'd like to thank Spirent for sponsoring the Packet Pushers and supporting us in bringing these shows to you, and to you, the listener, for listening to us. As always, you can find out more about the show at packetpushers.net. You can follow us on the Twitter as @PacketPushers, and you can find out more discussions on different topics by joining us at our forums at forums.packetpushers.net. And as always, remember that too much networking would never be enough.